Hello, everyone. Richard Nelson here with the Commonwealth Matters. Thank you for joining us. We are midway through the 2026 Kentucky legislative session. Well over 1,000 bills have been introduced between both the State House and State Senate, and only a fraction will get enacted into law, which I think is a good thing for the most part, because there are plenty of bad bills, bad ideas out there. But I want to focus on a couple of bills on this program that I think are, for the most part, good. So I want to highlight some positive legislation, a couple of bills that aren't so good. But before that, I want to address a question that I see debated in some of the online commentary, particularly in Christian media realms. I saw there's a podcast between two prominent Christian leaders about the extent that Christians should be involved with government. And it was interesting. This is a debate that surfaces, probably has come about ever since the time of Christ. To what extent should Christians be involved with in society in general? And in our context here, to what extent should Christians be involved with government? I believe that we shouldn't. I mean, there are entire denominations or groups. I think of the Amish and the Mennonite. We've got some up in Bald Knob, Kentucky, where I live, and they're not involved. They believe that it's unspiritual or not a Christian duty to be involved. But what does the Bible say? Should Christians be involved with government? Should they be involved with elections? If so, to what extent? And I'm just going to just touch on this briefly. God cares about government. God cares about righteousness. God cares about justice. In fact, he raises up leaders all throughout history to speak to righteousness and justice and morality. Half of our heroes in the Old Testament were involved with government. The other half were prophets that often spoke against governmental leaders. So God cares about these things, righteousness, justice. He cares about government integrity of our leaders. And he cares about these things in our personal lives, yes, but he cares about these things in the life of societies as well. So if you're a follower of Jesus, you should care about the things that God cares about. This means that when we collectively get together and do something called public policy, in other words, our state government or local government, when our leaders get together to hash out policies and the rules by which we live under, we should share our perspective when we have an opportunity. We should speak truth into areas of governing and what is right, stand against the things that are wrong, warn others when there's bad policy. So consider a few verses with me. Matthew 5:6 says, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied." Proverbs 21:21 says, "Whoever pursues righteousness and love finds life, prosperity, and honor." The king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. He directs it like a watercourse wherever he pleases. That's Proverbs 21:1. And of course, Romans 13 says that God ordains government. Let every soul be subject to the higher powers, for there's no power except that which God has established. The purpose of government, if you continue to read in Romans 13, is that it is there to punish evil and to reward good. Without government, you have a free-for-all. There are no rules, no guardrails, and society becomes a dangerous place. So government is here for a reason, again, specifically to ward and to stand against evil, and then to reward the good. All right. I think you already knew my perspective on Christians' involvement with government. If I wasn't convinced of that and convinced of what Scripture says to this, I wouldn't be doing this work. It is my deep, deep conviction that God's Word speaks to all of life. It speaks to our personal lives and how we ought to live. It speaks to how we can be reconciled to our Creator God through His Son, Jesus Christ. And it speaks to areas of government and public policy as well. I know some of you might be thinking, well, what about imposing your values? Or what about Christian nationalism. By the way, I'm going to be doing a podcast next week with the Kenwood Institute on the topic of Christian nationalism. So I guess stay tuned for that program, and I'll share some more thoughts on Christian nationalism from a Christian perspective, what I think is a biblical worldview on that. All right, let's jump into some legislation. Bear with me. I'm going to give an overview of some important bills that are moving through this legislative session, bills that I have worked on and my team here at Commonwealth Policy Center have worked on with legislators, private meetings, testifying in committee, and working in other areas as well. I want to start out with something good and positive. Some of you might recall I interviewed Robbie George. He's a professor at Princeton University earlier this year, late last year sometime. And he started something called Fidelity Month just a couple, 3-4 years ago, introduced the idea that as Americans, we should honor God as the giver of our rights, the author of our freedoms, be faithful in our marriages and to our families, and then pay homage to our country, celebrate patriotism, in other words. So it's God, family, and country. And we've actually worked with them and created a model resolution that's being used across the country. So here we are in little old Frankfort, Kentucky. Had the opportunity to work with Professor George in this effort to promote Fidelity Month. I'm going to read this to you. This is a version that we provided to him. It says, recognizes June 2026 as Fidelity Month, whereas the National Opinion Research Center and the Wall Street Journal found in an opinion poll that American support for traditional values such as faith, family, and patriotism are declining. And whereas the principles of faith, family, and patriotism have long been seen as crucial for the health of American society, and whereas children who are raised in a religious or spiritual environment are better protected from illicit drugs and promiscuity, and whereas children with a religious upbringing experience greater happiness, increased community involvement, a greater sense of mission and purpose, and higher levels of forgiveness, and whereas an abundance of research shows that children who grew up in married two-parent families are more likely to be employed, graduate from college, and are less likely to be depressed, be sentenced for criminal activity, end up poor, or bear children in their teens. And whereas George Washington stated, of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. And whereas the cultivation of such virtues as fidelity to God, family, community, and country leads to human flourishing and a healthy society, now therefore be it resolved that the Senate of the General Assembly of the Commonwealth of Kentucky enact June 2026 as Fidelity Month for the purpose of rededicating Kentucky to the civic virtues of faith, family, and patriotism. So there you have it. Short and to the point. Good news is we've not only provided this resolution to other states, but we have a sponsor here in Kentucky. State Senator Aaron Reed of Shelbyville sponsored this earlier this week. It was filed in the Senate. I was just in touch with him before I got on the program here, and he had some questions about it. And we believe that it has support in our state Senate, and it is likely to move forward and to be called for a vote on the state Senate. That's good news. I was also in touch with a state House member earlier today who is going to take the lead with this resolution on the House side. I'm really thrilled about this. Friends, I don't think something like this would have been passed 10 years ago. You know, 10 years ago, 16 Democrats held the Kentucky House. Many of them were good people. I knew many House Democrats, but the leadership and the rank and file were doing things that the far left was pushing. And this was one of those things that they would have stood against, wouldn't have passed. But now the political makeup has changed. We have leadership in the state legislature that's favorable to this, and I'm encouraged to see it moving ahead. Fidelity Month. Be on the lookout for that. It's likely to get some statewide attention. I expect various groups to come out against it, the usual suspects. And just stay tuned and you'll see more. Hopefully it'll be positive news overall that you'll be seeing on this. All right, moving along, I want to touch on a number of other high-profile bills. Again, in the 2026 General Assembly, Senate Bill 26 deals with DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion programs and policies in K-12 Kentucky schools. Right now in Louisville, Jefferson County Public Schools, largest school district, there is a DEI department. They pay the administrator of this DEI department six-figure salary, one of the highest paid administrators in Jefferson County Public Schools. They've got over a $30 million budget, and they're promoting DEI. Now, what is the problem with DEI? I've been criticized. There are some people who say, hey, this is just creating a level playing field. This is helping people out. In fact, Joe Girth criticized my testimony in front of a committee where I spoke against DEI. I think he is mistaken. I think that his criticisms are misplaced. DEI is simply this, if you're not aware of it. It treats people based on external characteristics. It treats people differently. That it either favors certain groups or disfavors other groups based on whether your skin color is, your gender, your ethnicity. And that is contrary to American ideals of being judged by the content of our character and not the color of our skin, as Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. put it. Earlier this week, I was in with a legislator regarding keeping DEI from K-12 public schools, the actual sponsor of this bill. Now, this is in line with President Trump's executive order banning it. By the way, for schools that do not root out DEI policies or principles or procedures, they're going to lose federal funding. Now, this is not unlike what former President Joe Biden did when it came to transgender ideology, because he threatened public schools to remove funding if they didn't allow biological boys to go into the girls' bathrooms or to join the girls' sports teams. Trump is doing it in the opposite direction, a conservative direction, and this is related to DEI. Senate Bill 26 is likely to die, unfortunately. This is a bill that keeps it out of K-12 public schools, and had a lengthy meeting with the sponsor. I'm not going to go into too many details, but there are some personal grievances, some people who are upset at her, the sponsor of the bill. It's Lindsay Titchener, by the way, and it's not moving forward. Now, it doesn't mean that there's not a backdoor attempt or another effort or another person that could lead the charge, but as it is, this bill, it doesn't appear to be moving.
Hi, Richard Nelson here. At CPC, we believe that human dignity and our rights do not come from government, but these are gifts from God that must be protected in every generation. If you agree, may I ask you what you're doing to preserve freedom? Who's fighting for your values? If you're looking for somebody to be your voice with our government, somebody you can trust to promote conservative principles, then would you consider supporting us today? Truth is, we need your help. For $25 a month, you'll receive exclusive content, monthly and quarterly newsletters, special invitations to our events, and legislative and election insights. You can go to our website below to make a donation today. Together, we can leave our children a legacy of freedom and opportunity. So join us today.
I'm going to talk about, if I can move on to, again, DEI, but in another context. I testified in a state legislative committee recently about state money that is funding a DEI program. There's a group called Teach for America, and they are steeped in DEI principles. They're bringing bright kids out of college. They've got to go through the initiation process, and they learn Teach for America principles, and then they place these bright students in disadvantaged areas. In Kentucky, there is a headquarters in the mountains of eastern Kentucky. I believe. I want to say it's out of Hazard. And I talked about Teach for America. I talked about the dangers of DEI, how this really should have no place in publicly funded schools, talked about the discrimination aspect. And after I was done with my testimony, and it was documented, I think it was accurate, well-documented, tried to represent my position as best as I could, the lobbyist for Teach for America testified in on behalf, of course, of taking the money, which $1.4 million, by the way, over 2 years, the last budget cycle. They're asking for the continuation of that funding for this next budget cycle. But he essentially said that my testimony was scurrilous. It was slanderous against DEI. I was accurate, told the truth, cited the sources. But I say this because money's involved. This person who is critical of me, and that, by the way, that's the arena that I'm in. I feel called to be here. That happens. You're going to be criticized or misrepresented. But this person makes a pretty good chunk of money. He took in over $750,000 from his clients last year. Now, I'm not questioning whether or not somebody should be paid for what they believe they're worth. That's apparently what his clients believe he's worth. But I would say this, that when money is involved and when somebody's contract is at stake, often that becomes the most important thing, and whether or not to fight for it or to advocate for its continuation makes people do the wrong thing sometimes. And that's no secret. But friends, some things more than money should motivate us. A sense of justice and righteousness, good policy. How about fairness to the taxpayers? These are things that I and my team at CPC are fighting for. There are some things more important than money. We're not getting rich doing this. We're blessed to have support from across the state. We're blessed to be able to do this kind of work. Money is not the motivator for it, though. And I say that as an important point of contrast. All right, moving on to another issue related to money, gambling in Kentucky. Gambling is endemic to our culture. We've had horse racing since forever. If you just go down the road from here into Lexington, you're in horse country. Beautiful farms, by the way. I love the farms. I love the fields. I love those rock walls and fences. Gorgeous country. Horses are beautiful. Personally, I could do without the gambling. I don't think that gambling is conducive to a healthy society. Some people may be able to do it as an entertainment somehow. Many people cannot do that as entertainment. But as a principle, I think that gambling is not a positive endeavor. By the way, you're not going to see in Scripture a thou shalt not gamble. However, you do see principles that speak of not chasing fantasies. Do read in the Proverbs of he who makes his money grow little by little is wise. You see another proverb that says an inheritance quickly gained in the beginning will not be blessed in the end. A gambling jackpot is like a huge inheritance that you get. And many people do not have the discipline or capacity to manage a huge amount of wealth that they come into. And there's a danger with that. And I think of in Fiddler on the Roof when Tevye talked about riches and, look, if riches are a curse, may I be smitten, he said. Of course, he was joking about that. He and his family were living in poverty. And I don't wish for people to live in poverty. I wish that that they'd be lifted out of it. But friends, let me be clear. Gambling and putting a wager on a horse or putting money into a slot machine is not your ticket to getting out of poverty. It leads to more poverty, if anything. And that can be documented as well. So, all right, let's talk about legislation. House Bill 582, it would increase the gambling age from 18 to 21. It also bans prop betting. Good things. Kentucky is one of only 7 states that allows 18-year-olds to gamble. It increases the age to 21. And then prop betting. This is where people have the sports apps on their phones, the FanDuel and DraftKings and all the other things out there. And they can have their phone out and they can do prop bets in the middle of a game. When they're watching a football game, they can bet whether or not their team gets the first down, or whether or not their team scores so many points before the half, or whether or not the quarterback gets sacked so many times. It's very addictive. It's very easy to do. And it's a very likely way to lose a lot of money in a short period of time. House Bill 582, David Hale has agreed to sponsor this. His provisions, some of them, have moved over to another bill, House Bill 904, which expands gambling to include fantasy sports wagering. I say expand because right now there are fantasy sports leagues. People are doing it. Sometimes there's money involved. Sometimes there's not. But this would create a state framework for fantasy sports wagering. Now, here's some good things in this bill. It increases the minimum gambling age from 18 to 21. It bans prop betting on college sports, doesn't deal with the pro sports, but on the college sports. It bans prediction market gambling. This is a new way for people to gamble on anything under the sun. It's not just horses or pulling this lever of a slot machine, but prediction markets can put money on whether or not there's a political candidate will win. There was a prediction market, for example, on whether Iran would be bombed, a prediction market on whether their supreme leader would be killed. That's created a controversy. Should you place bets on whether or not somebody should be killed, or whether or not they will be killed? Very, very hot issue right now. All right. So this bill also bans felons from obtaining gambling licenses. And then there's also integrity measures to prevent fraud and money laundering. So there's some good in this bill, and yet there's also a fly in the ointment as well, because, again, we don't think that the expansion of gambling is a good thing. We don't believe that mainstreaming of gambling and creating a gambling culture is a good or healthy thing. All right, House Bill 4 is the bill that defines grooming, and it creates penalties, civil penalties, for those who are charged and found guilty of the crime of grooming. I met with the sponsor of this bill the other day. It looks like this bill is going to be rolled into another bill. By the way, what I'm sharing with you is how the sausage is made, and it's never pleasant to see sausage being made. And then also to not just see it, but then to feel the frustration, to learn about the kind of the silly and the foolish things that are happening. Because, you know, these are issues worth our attention. These are battles worth fighting for. But then when you see foolishness raise its head, it can be frustrating. But foolishness is part of the sausage-making process, and it's unfortunate. But it does not deter us from continuing to move ahead and to work for what is right and what's good. All right, we are soon to be out of time, so I'm going to move through the rest of these fairly quickly. House Bill 646 is the bill that bans life-ending drugs from coming into Kentucky, whether they're abortion-causing drugs or whether they are assisted suicide drugs. It would imposes further penalties on those who are shipping these drugs from across state lines. House Bill 227, it bans social media use from those 15 and under in Kentucky. This just passed earlier this week. It's a great bill. If parents want to let their children who are under 15 or 15 to get on social media, parents can opt their child in. This bill passed the state house, I think, unanimously. All right, bill that's not so great would allow doctors, certain number of doctors, to come into Kentucky from other countries who do not have the same level of training as doctors in this country. They've not met the residency requirements. And this bill did receive some statewide attention. I talked with one of the people who spoke against it. They received a lot of criticism. They were told that they were being racist or bigoted simply because they were opposed to doctors who were not American citizens. I disagree with that. This is a very kind-hearted person who actually was a missionary in a very impoverished country. And her concern was that anybody involved with the healthcare industry in this country should meet the same standards as doctors and nurses here who are residents. Not against it in principle. If you're overseas and you're going to come here, and we do have a medical need, by the way, there's a shortage of doctors, there's a shortage of nurses, and we need more. But if they're going to come here, they need to meet the same standards. I thought that was a very good argument. All right, moving on, Senate Bill 72, conscience protections for healthcare professionals. Here is a headline to the Kentucky Lantern, one of the most left-leaning news outlets in the state. It said this: medical conscience bills would let providers refuse more health care. Again, left-leaning, critical of this. This bill does really, it's not refusing more health care. It is protecting their rights as human beings to not be forced to participate in something like, oh, I don't know, hormone therapy for people who have gender dysphoria, or to perform an abortion. You know, so much of our politics has crept into medicine. And there are many doctors of the Christian faith or of other faiths that object to certain procedures that harm people. How about assisted suicide? These are issues that are coming to the forefront, and doctors are facing these things. A person who commented on this, Bill Duncan, who's part of a conservative think tank in Utah, said this, that there's no policy advantage in requiring people to participate in a practice that violates their beliefs. Well said. We have not had to deal with these kind of issues, abortion, gender transitions, assisted suicide. These are relatively new in the history of our country. But one thing that has been a longstanding principle is that we have protected religious freedom, and its derivative, conscience rights, is a First Amendment protection. And we forget that. Senate Bill 72 hits the reset button, if you will, and it does maintain conscience rights for our healthcare professionals. All right, these are the bills that we are tracking and working on. There are some others that I did not mention, but these are the highlights at this point. I want to encourage you to do this as I wrap up the program. Pray for your legislators. Pray for Governor Andy Beshear. Pray that God would bless them with wisdom and discernment, and that they would do what's right and good and healthy, upholding our basic human rights, and then working for policies that lead to human flourishing. If you care to, you can call the Legislative Message Line. The number is 800-372-7181, 800-372-7181, and you can leave your opinion and your perspective on any of these issues that I talked about. All right, we are out of time. Thank you so much for joining me on the Commonwealth Matters. And until next time, may God bless you.